Occasionally, in my conversations with some of you, you'll tell me that you're traveling and you're going to meet up with friends. But some of you say, well, you know, I've known this person since grade school or since high school, and I've known them for decades and decades and decades, and we're just really close. We always love to get together and catch up and talk. And I'm just thinking, as you're sharing that, I'm thinking to myself, I don't have friends like that. I'm just not really good at keeping friends over the years and the decades, and I just think to myself, wow, that's just a really precious thing, right? To have friends that you've known for years and years and years. That these are the type of friends that you haven't seen for many, many years, and when you get together, you just pick up right where you left off. It's great to have that. And as I was thinking about this, I just thought, actually, I do have friends like this. I just had a friend recently who lost his father, and he emailed me and said, you know, my dad passed away. And what I noticed was that it wasn't like an email blast. It wasn't on Facebook or anything like that. It was just a single email to me. And so, you know, I just responded to him, and we have that sort of relationship. I have friends who are super generous to me, and maybe they're just really, they're really sad because I'm a poor pastor, and so they're always like really generous to me, you know, in material things and all sorts of ways and encouragement. I have friends who I said, you know, hey, if I and my wife pass away, will you take care of our children? And they're like, yeah. And, you know, friends that I just chat with and talk with and am able to be myself with. And I suspect that you have those sorts of friends in your life also. And they range from all sorts of things, you know, that you have your best friends forever, right? You think your husband or your wife is, you know, is the perfect friend. Your friends at school, or that people you can talk to, people that you can engage with, and the ones that are living life with you, doing life with you. I think we all ought to have those sorts of friends. Henry Nouwen is this Christian, sort of mystic, is the way I would describe him. He puts Christianity in terms of relationships and hard relationships and meaningful relationships. And so he said this quote, "When we honestly ask ourselves which person in our lives means the most to us, we often find that it is those who, instead of giving advice, solutions, or cures, it's those who have chosen rather to share our pain and touch our wounds with a warm and tender hand." And that's true. I mean, we love people who give us advice, give us wisdom. Hey, you should do this. You ought not to do that. But there are those who know us, right? Who know what you're going through and embrace you in the good times and the bad, who walk with you, those sorts of things. And so when we talk, we're closing the book of Colossians, and we're talking about Colossians, there's just this overarching theme that the book has. And it's something like this, that Jesus is better than anything or anyone this world has to offer. Jesus is better than anything or anyone this world has to offer. And so the idea that there's so many things that can be thrown in front of you that entice you, that incur, that pull you away from the truth of the gospel, yet Jesus is always better. You may like those other things, you may engage those other things, but Jesus is always better. And so if you couple that truth with the question that Jesus was asked when he said, what's the most important thing that we can do? I mean, if I'm going to be a follower of yours, Jesus, what is the command that I should follow? If you could distill it down into one. And Jesus says, well, it's a two-parter. One is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. So every fiber of your being, think about how to love God. And the second part of that is to love people with that same sort of love. Now, people may say, well, yeah, Jack, but there's the great command, right? I mean, the great commission. We ought to do the great commission. Right? But Jesus never called that the great commission. We call that the great commission. Jesus called loving God, loving others, the great command. And so if you love God and love others, you will do what we call the great commission. And so Jesus is better than anything or anyone this world has to offer. And that become, and if you believe that truth, then that becomes central to your relationships also. That you'll do two things. You'll surround yourselves with people of like mind who believe in this truth also. That when you go through life, when you do life, they're doing life with you because they believe in the same truth. And they understand you, and they you understand them. That Jesus is central to everything about you. You'll surround yourselves with people who believe that same truth, and you'll engage people in order to point them to this truth. That people who don't know Jesus in this way, you want to point them to Jesus. You want to say, Jesus is better than anything. Jesus is better than anyone. And let me show you how. Let me tell you why. And so we surround ourselves with people. Christians are not meant to live in isolation. Christians are not meant to be hermits. Christians are meant to engage the world by engaging people. And so the Apostle Paul understood this. And so he writes a bunch of letters to churches and to individuals. And usually when he writes a letter to a church or to a region, he ends his letter by listing a bunch of names. And these are people who have helped him, who have encouraged him, who have supported him. These are people that he wants other people to know, hey, you should watch out for this guy. He needs some extra support, some help. He lists people who he wants to remind, hey, remember you said you would do this. And this is true of the book of Colossians. This is a church to the church. This is a letter to the church in the city of Colossae. And at the end, Paul names names. And we find this in Colossians chapter 4 at the end, last few paragraphs. And so as Paul mentions each name, let's, you don't hear too many sermons about names, right? Some books in the Bible have all these genealogies, like so-and-so is the son of so-and-so, is the son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so. It's like we just blow past it, right? The names are really important. Most times. And so we're going to take a look at each of these names and figure out who these people are. So I'm going to use a figure like this, right? And so it looks like a badly drawn eight.
Snowman.
upright infinity. But it's supposed to be a person, okay? And I fashioned him out of myself, okay? So big head, big belly, okay? So the first person that Paul refers to at the end of the book of Colossians is a man named Tychicus. So mentioned a few times in Scripture, doesn't really receive a lot of recognition, but during Paul's third missionary journey, he took at least three. We have this in the book of Acts. Says several men were traveling with him, traveling with Paul, and they were Sopater, son of Pyrrhus, from Berea, Aristarchus and Secundus from Thessalonica, Gaius from Derbe, Timothy and Tychicus and Trophimus from the province of Asia. So he's a traveling companion of Paul's. And then when Paul writes a letter to the church in Ephesus, he says, to bring you up to date, Tychicus will give you the full report about what I'm doing and how I'm getting along. He's a beloved brother and faithful helper in the Lord's work. I've sent him to you for this very purpose, to let you know how we're doing and to encourage you. In Titus 3:12, he says, I am planning to send either Artemis or Tychicus to you. So although we don't usually talk about this guy named Tychicus, he was sort of instrumental in helping Paul with all these different ministries. And in Colossians chapter 4, it says, Tychicus will give you a full report about how I am getting along. He's a beloved brother and a faithful helper who serves with me in the Lord's work. I have sent him to you for this very purpose, to let you know how we are doing and to encourage you. And so if we could describe Tychicus, it might be something like this. He's a beloved brother, faithful helper and brother. He's a partner in ministry to Paul. And a few times in Ephesians and then here in Colossians, he says, he's there to encourage you, right? This is part of who Tychicus is, right? And so as Paul mentions him, these are some of these characteristics that Paul has in his mind. The second person that Paul talks about is a guy named Onesimus. He is a runaway slave from his master named Philemon. And it's suggested that maybe Onesimus robbed from Philemon also, and he's run away to the city of Rome where Paul was. And Rome has, and Paul has talked to Onesimus, maybe even converted him to Christianity, and now he's with Paul. And so Colossians 4:9 says, I am also sending Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, one of your own people. He and Tychicus will tell you everything that's happening here. And so Onesimus, as a slave, right, who's a runaway slave, he's a faithful brother. He's a beloved brother. He has that sort of relationship with the Apostle Paul. Aristarchus is one of Paul's traveling companions also, and he was involved with this this riot in the city of Ephesus. Oops, I'm sorry, this Onesimus, okay. In Acts chapter 19, so they're in the city of Ephesus, and all these people are angry at Paul and all these people preaching the gospel. And at this, their anger boiled, the anger of all the people in the city. And soon the whole city was filled with confusion. Everyone rushed to the amphitheater, dragging along Gaius and Aristarchus, who were Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia. And in verse 4, several men were traveling with Paul. They were Sarpedon from Pyrrhus, from Berea, Aristarchus, and Secundus from Thessalonica. Traveling companion was right in the middle of a huge riot for the gospel. And Colossians chapter 4, verse 10 says, Aristarchus, who is in prison with me, send you his greetings. What a comfort he has been. So it doesn't say Aristarchus, who is in Rome with me, or Aristarchus, who sends you his greetings also. So when Paul says he was in prison with me, you get the impression that he is in chains in the cell with Paul, right? He's not just visiting Paul back and forth, and he goes out to his own apartment later. He's in prison with Paul. And so from Aristarchus, we see that he's a fellow sufferer. He's alongside of Paul, and he's experiencing all the physical suffering that Paul has experienced. And he's a partner, right? He traveled with Paul. He was caught up in this riot with Paul, for Paul, and he's a comforter. What a comforter he has been. Next person is Mark. Mark is the author of the Gospel of Mark. He was a helper with Paul and Barnabas as they journeyed in the book of Acts to different cities. And so Acts 13 says, Barnabas and Saul were sent out by the Holy Spirit. John Mark, which is Mark, went with them as their assistant. And he traveled with them. He helped them with different aspects of their gospel missionary and the gospel, spreading the gospel message. But then something happened later, and nobody really knows what happened, but apparently Mark left them. And Bible doesn't really say why, but he just said, I'm leaving. He went home. So Acts 16 tells us, Paul said to Barnabas, hey, let's go back and visit each city where we previously preached. Good idea. Barnabas agreed and wanted to take along John Mark. But Paul disagreed strongly, since John Mark had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in their work. Their disagreement was so sharp that they separated. Barnabas took John Mark with him, and he sailed for Cyprus, and Paul took another guy, and he went a different direction. So that Paul was so... it doesn't really describe what his emotions were. Maybe he's angry at him, and he's frustrated with John Mark. But he says, he's not coming with us. Like, he left. So no second chances. And it's not going to happen. Yet in Colossians chapter 4, it says, Aristarchus, who is in prison with me, sends you his greetings, and so does Mark, Barnabas' cousin. As you were instructed before, make Mark welcome if he comes your way. What a comfort they have been. So apparently, between that incident and that missionary trip and Paul writing to this church in Colossae, they made up. They made up somehow. And so Paul says, you know, he's my friend, he's my partner. He's been reconciled with me. And so you see these words, as instructed before, make Mark welcome if he comes your way. And I'm wondering if that's because of Mark abandoning them and Paul being so harsh to him. And maybe Mark's feeling like, I'm not sure if people, if they heard that story that I abandoned them, they're going to welcome me. And Paul specifically says, make him feel welcome. Next person is Justus. He's not mentioned anywhere else in the New Testament. Nothing's known more about him than what's given in this passage in Colossians. He was a Jew, and he is with Paul. And Colossians 4:11 says, Jesus, the one we call Justus, because we don't want to confuse Justus with Jesus, the Son of God. He's just a guy named Jesus, but we call him Justus. So Justus, the one we also call Jesus, also sends his greetings. So he's with Paul. These are the only Jewish believers among my co-workers. That's Mark, Aristarchus, and Justus. They are working with me here for the kingdom of God, and what a comfort they have been. And so the way I describe Justus is he's there. You ever have a friend who is just there for you? You know, they don't give you like huge tons of advice, or, you know, they're not always trouncing around with you off to different places. They're just there, right? If you're going through a difficult time, you call them up and they're there for you and they can help you, okay? And so that's how I describe Justus. He's there, and Paul says he's a comforter. He's been a comfort to him, yeah. Epaphras is the next person. He's the guy who sort of basically started bringing the gospel to the city of Colossae. So Epaphras went to see, he went to Ephesus, and Paul was there, preached the gospel to Epaphras. Epaphras brought it back to Colossae, and this church started. And so we enforce that idea. Colossians chapter 1, verse 7. You learn about the good news from Epaphras, our beloved co-worker. He is Christ's faithful servant, helping on your us on your behalf. And then Philemon, the letter to the slave master. You learn about the good news from Epaphras, our beloved co-worker. He is Christ's faithful servant, and he is helping us on your behalf. And so this is just the heart that Epaphras has. Right, he wants to share the good news. He speaks of it. And in Colossians 4:12, he says, Epaphras, a member of your own fellowship and a servant of Christ, sends you his greetings. He always prays earnestly for you, asking God to make you strong and perfect, fully confident that you're following the whole will of God. I can assure you that he prays hard for you and also for believers in Laodicea and Hierapolis. Those are two cities that are close to Colossae. So this is Epaphras, right? Lots of things about Epaphras, but a couple of things that jump out is that he's an evangelist, right? He shares the gospel. I mean, he's excited about how Jesus has changed his life, and he wants to share that same truth with those around him. And he's intense in prayer. He's an intense prayer. I'm not sure if that's a word. He's an intense prayer. So I say both far and near. So he's not just praying for stuff that's going on around him or with people. No, he's praying for different cities, right? He's praying for Laodicea and Hierapolis. And so we would just call him like a really excited, fired up Christian, right? His life has been changed by the gospel, and he wants other people to know Jesus also. We have a man named Luke that Paul mentions. We actually don't know that much about Luke, although he's the author of the book, the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts. He was a doctor, and he's probably the only non-Jew who wrote of the New Testament, depending on what you think about the book of Hebrews. And so in Acts chapter 16, it says, Luke writing in the book of Acts. We decided to leave from Macedonia at once, having concluded that God was calling us to preach the good news there. And so when in the book of Acts, when the author says we, Luke is the author, and so he's traveling with Paul also. And so he's a traveling companion with Paul. And Colossians says, Luke, the beloved doctor, sends his greetings. And I don't think it's any mistake that Paul emphasizes that Luke is a doctor. I think he does this because he realizes there's something about Luke and his heart that makes him a caretaker. He wants to help people, right? Doctors take this oath, Hippocratic oath, to do good and no harm. And so he emphasizes this about Luke. He's a caretaker. The next person that's mentioned is a person named Demas. During Paul's first imprisonment in Rome, Demas was also in Rome. In Colossians 4:14 it says, Luke, the beloved doctor, sends his greetings, and so does Demas. So Demas is there in Rome with him, interacting with Paul, going out into the city of Rome. Don't know very much about the guy. Mentioned a couple of other times. And the other last time he's mentioned is in a letter that Paul writes to a young pastor named Timothy. And at the end of this letter, he lists names again, Paul does. And one of those persons is Demas. And he says this in 2 Timothy 4, Demas has deserted me because he loves the things of this world, has gone to Thessalonica. And so by the time he writes Colossians, just a few years later, when he writes to Timothy, Demas has decided he loves the world more than he loves Jesus, and he deserts Paul. We don't know the details of Demas's situation or his desertion or the loves that he has for the world, but it's evident that Demas decided that the things that Satan offered were better than the things that Jesus offered. And so he turns his back on Paul, and he deserts the faith. Nobody wants a Demas in their life, but God puts them there for reasons and plans. So Demas is an abandoner and lover of the world. But he interacted with Paul for quite some time. The next person is a woman, the only woman in this list, a woman named Nympha. Colossians 4:15 says, please give my greetings to our brothers and sisters in Laodicea, and to Nympha and the church that meets in her house. And so, depending on how you read it, it sort of sounds like she's a resident of Laodicea, which is only a few miles from Colossae. And so there's a local church in the city of Laodicea also. So she opens up her house for the church to meet there. And so, remember, this is the first century, early in the first century. There are no Christian churches. They're Jewish synagogues, Roman temples. That's all you got. And so she opens up her house, which means that she's probably wealthy. So most houses for common blue-collar type people in those days were fairly small. And so to have multiple people over groups of people, you have to have a large area. So she's probably a wealthy person. And she uses her house for these church meetings, and that's where we get the term house church. And so she's generous. That's her characteristic. She's generous. And I have friends like this. They buy big houses. And it's interesting that, you know, they're so in love with God that they don't say things like, yeah, I bought a big house so we can fill it up with more junk. So we can be comfortable, so I can have a 75-inch screen, big screen TV. Bought a big house so we can have Bible studies over here. So when we have family ministry over here, you know, the kids can be in one part of the house while the parents can be in another part of the house, and that sort of thing. And so it's just a heart of generosity. The last person is Archippus. Archippus, we know from the letter to the slave master Philemon, where Paul writes, this letter is from Paul, a prisoner preaching for the good news about Christ Jesus, and from our brother Timothy. I am writing to Philemon, our beloved co-worker, and to our sister Apphia, and to our fellow soldier Archippus. So he's right there with Paul. He's sojourning all with Paul. He's working with Paul. And so Colossians 4:16 reads, after you read this letter, pass it on to the church at Laodicea so they can read it too, and you should read the letter I wrote to them. So it seems like there's a letter exchange. So we have the letter that Paul wrote to the city of Colossae. We call it Colossians. And apparently Paul wrote a letter to the church in Laodicea. We don't have that letter. But the way it's read here, you should read the letter I wrote to them. Right? Pass it back and forth. Verse 17, and say to Archippus, be sure to carry out the ministry the Lord gave you. Nobody knows what that ministry is. Could be one part of that ministry is that he's the mailman. He delivers these letters to different churches, different regions, and he carries them back and forth. Archippus, you know, and Paul just wants these churches to read the letter. Read the letter. Read their letter. Read your letter. Exchange them. Read the letters. They're perfectly good letters. Okay? Archippus sounds like a person who needs encouragement. Just a little bit of encouragement. Right? Stay the course. Complete the ministry. Don't forget. Don't get distracted. He's a person that God puts in your life that he's an encouragee. Right? He's not an encourager, he's an encouragee. He's just, that's not a word. Microsoft made it very clear to me. It's not a word. But he's a person that in your life, it's like, yeah, I just want to encourage that person. Right? So we have 10 people, bunch of different characteristics, different ways that Paul loves that person, different ways of those people love Paul and how they're being used in the kingdom in different places. And if we could list them, they would be listed like this. Right? Beloved, brother, faithful helpers, partners, encouragers. They're people who are there for you. They're evangelists. They're prayer warriors. People who are generous to you. They suffer with you, doing in the same way as you. And of course, there's the person who's abandoner and lover of the world at the bottom. With the exception of Demas, I think we would love to have a person like this in our life. Right? Who wouldn't want to have a person like this where we feel supported and encouraged in the faith and the walk, and we're able to walk with them and do ministry with them, that we're able to encourage them, we're able to do some good work for God. And so, remember this guy at the very beginning? So what in our mind, sometimes we think we want to find a single person that encompasses all those different characteristics. Something like this. I want to find one person that's like all these things. Just one person. And we think all these positive traits can be found in one person. The problem is it doesn't work that way. And you know it. If you're married, you think your husband or your wife is that perfect person. When you're dating them and engaged to them, and you first get married to them, it's like, oh, you're perfect, honey. I love you. I don't need anybody else in my life. And then you go on for a few months, maybe a couple years, and you realize, who did I marry? I don't even know this person, right? Because they don't fulfill everything that you need. And what happens is you sort of get disillusioned. Not no hallelujah to that. Okay. Some of you have a close friend, right? Your best friend forever. I'm going to be your best friend forever. We can share everything. We can do everything together. It'll be great. We'll grow old together. And what happens is there's a section or part of your life where they don't get it, or they can't be there for you, and you get disillusioned about your friendship. You're in a church, your church hires a pastor, and you say, our pastor's perfect. He's going to be the perfect guy. I'll tell you. No. I'll tell you, he's not. And you get disillusioned. Okay. So Paul isn't advocating that we find one person that fulfills all those characteristics. It's a different picture. It's more like this. This is why Paul mentions so many people, right? They're not anonymous people. They have names. They have places in different parts of the New Testament where they pop up. And if we can, as much as possible, we figure out who they are and what they did and where they're going. This is sort of like Paul's understanding of relationships, right? And so we need all these sorts of different types of people in our lives so that we are supported, we are encouraged, we are challenged, we are prayed for. We're able to grow and mature and able to forgive others and engage others, that we're able to encourage others. We're able to learn from difficult people and trying circumstances, all these different people in our lives. They all don't come at you at once necessarily, but they engage you in different ways at different times. For example, there's those who are faithful in faith and friendship and in ministry. Tychicus is a faithful brother, partner in ministry. Onesimus, a beloved brother. Aristarchus suffered with Paul in prison, chained up next to him. Right? They're walking with you in ministry. You're not there alone. You got those who comfort you and support you and are there for you. Justus, who just don't know very much about the guy, but it just seems like he's with Paul. Hey, Paul, you need anything? I'm there. You know, you want to talk about anything. Luke is a caretaker, right? In his heart, he loves to take care of people. And that's part and parcel of who he is. There are people who serve alongside of you for God's kingdom. You have Nympha, who's just generous out of her heart. She's not throwing her money away, not just buying stuff for herself. She's opening up her home so that people can come in and know Jesus. Archippus, right? This guy who does the small things in your life and for ministry. Small things that are huge, have huge implications, hugely important. You have this diversity and ethnicity, education, social status, wealth. Nympha's wealthy. Paul's just this preaching Jewish guy walking around. Right? From Paul, we get the phrase, he's a tent maker. Tent maker means as he's going on these mission trips, he's working to make money. Right? He's not wealthy in that way. Luke is a doctor. He's in a different class all by himself. Justus, Aristarchus, Mark were the only Jews with Paul. The rest were Gentiles. So there's ethnic diversity in his relationships also. There are those who God places in your life so that God can use you in his kingdom in a better way. And I mentioned before, nobody wants a Demas in their life. Who wants someone who's going to betray you, desert you, someone you invested your time and your energy in just to walk away from the faith? Like, I don't want any of that. But God uses these people. So let me give you a couple examples. In the Old Testament, a young man named Joseph had brothers who were mean to him. And these brothers were so mean to Joseph that they abandoned him, threw him down into a hole in the ground, and wanted him to die. Well, that plan didn't quite work out. From that hole, from that desertion by his brothers, from the hate from his brothers, he became on to become the second command of all Egypt. And that continued this agreement that God had with his people of Israel to become the greatest nation ever. So Joseph had his brothers. Jesus had Judas. Would Jesus have gone to the cross without the betrayal of Judas? Sure. But Judas is in the story, right? And Judas was a betrayer. Judas loved the money, and he deserted Jesus. So when you're hurt by someone, when you think someone has betrayed you, someone has left the faith and left you high and dry, alone, think about that for a moment. What is God trying to teach you? What does God want to do in that moment for you? How do you think God's going to use you? And instead of closing yourself off, being angry about it, being frustrated, ask yourself, what is God doing here? And then there are those that build and grow your character and your integrity. So again, I mentioned Mark and Paul had this huge split. And Paul is angry with Mark. And Marcus sort of, he left for good reasons, nobody knows, but he's sort of cowering and timid, if I could use that word. And so they had to make up. And I'm guessing, because of Paul's position and his status, that Paul is the one who said, okay, I have to be the one to make up to Mark. Right? And there's something cathartic, something freeing and foundational when your character is strengthened and developed, because it's something you have to do for someone else. And there are those whom we are called to encourage, to love, and to exhort, right? People we challenge, people we encourage, people to whom we say the hard things, right? Onesimus, you need to go back to your master, right? You're a runaway slave, all right? Archippus, you know, I want you to deliver this letter. I know you can do it. Don't get distracted, right? And so all these different people in your lives, God brings them to you. And sometimes we work so hard to make a friendship, but we just need to sort of look around and see who God has brought into your life. Begin praying, God, I want this person to love you as much as I love you. I want this person to know that you're better than anything or anyone this world has to offer. Help us do life together for your kingdom. See, the bigger picture that God has for Paul, when he lists all these people, is not just say, hey, remember this person, thank that person, this person's helped me. It's not just a list of names. It's a bigger picture that looks something like this. It's not just us in the middle, it's a church in the middle. And the church has all these people who are diverse in personality, ethnicities, and giftings, and socioeconomic levels. We are not meant to be cookie-cutter Christians. We need to stop doing that. We need to say, okay, I got to be like this. This is the only way to be a Christian. And every good Christian is this way. It doesn't work that way. We're one body, different parts, equal in value, equal in importance, but we're different. And so the church needs each of you to make all of us better to be able to do what God wants for his kingdom. So the truth that we walk with is Jesus is better than anything or anyone this world has to offer. Not just in things, but in our relationships. And God's not saying, hey, I want to bring a person in your life so you can be friends and have fun. He brings people into your life for a purpose. And you are in someone else's life for a purpose. And this is why Paul lists all these people. This is the truth that jumps out at us in the book of Colossians. And I just want you to, you're sick of me saying it.
No, I'm not.
I don't want you to forget it.
I won't.
Okay. I want you to keep remembering it. And I want you to understand that no matter what Satan throws at you, Jesus is still better. So I just want you, maybe take a moment to pray and to think about all these different relationships that you have and how God is using them in your life and how you can be used in another person's life. What kind of characteristics would you draw from those other people? And what is uniquely special about you as you engage another person? Right, so think about that. I think picture people, picture characteristics, picture traits.